and welcome back to Hooked on Hitchcock. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got my co-host over here, G. Larry Butler. How you doing, G?
Hey, folks. Hey, Jonathan. Doing fine. Everything good so far.
And we've got Lisa Cantoral as a special guest today. Our, I guess our, I don't know, what do you call them? Expert witnesses, you know, like in this movie. Lisa has been on a bunch of my podcasts. She was on, by the way, hi, Lisa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And Lisa's been on a bunch of my podcasts, including Hollywood Boulevard podcast, which the first podcast I believe we did was Hitchcock. And we had her on, and that was when I found out that Notorious was her favorite, like, one, you know, period. So she was really excited to come on the show and talk about it, since she couldn't make the Dial In for Murder one, darn, but she's able to make this one, which we're very happy to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. So let's just dive right into this. Who wants to like summarize what the plot of this movie is? Lisa, do you want to try that?
Nah, I'm not really a plot summarizer.
Really? You own your own like publishing company. Like I would have thought
that's
that you
hardest part. Writing back copy is harder than writing the book.
Okay. What about you, Larry? What do you could you summarize this movie?
I would prefer that you do it. You're so
Jesus Christ. All right, fine.
Intellectuals. We were gonna talk about what's interesting about it.
We will. But first, I mean, first people, and if you haven't seen Notorious, then I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, because we're gonna spoiler the hell out of it.
I was wondering about that. So
yeah, you can do spoilers all you want. But yeah, so basically you know what? Fuck it. I'll read the IMDb. I'm going to cheat. Because I just don't want to say the whole thing and then just get all like mixed up or whatever.
See, if I do it, it's just going to sound like an episode of Drunk History.
Right. Well, that would be fun too, though. This is a long one, so maybe it'll explain a lot. I don't know. There's a bunch of them.
For the highlights, there's a lot of plot. There's quite a lot of plot.
Sure.
Main arc.
This is the This is like, let's do the little plot. Following the conviction of her German father for treason against the U.S., Alicia Huberman takes to drinking men. She's approached by government agent T.R. Devlin, who asks her to spy on a group of her father's Nazi friends operating out of Rio de Janeiro. A romance develops between Alicia and Devlin, but she starts to get too involved in her work.
It's
a good summary of it without going into too much detail. You know, it's spoiler-free one on that one.
That was written by a professional summarizer.
Exactly. I don't know. It's always like for IMDb, they always write like anonymous, because nobody like, I guess, says who they are, who say it, you know, who put them up there. And I'm just like wondering who goes into like IMDb things and says, you know what I want? Because there's like, I swear to God, there's like 10 versions, you know, like 10 people have posted their own idea of what that story's about. That's so cool. Yeah, anywho, so we're gonna, yeah, I guess it starts out with I guess let's get into like our thoughts on it, like, you know, absolutely. So I guess Lisa, you've been a fan of this movie since, I guess, like the first time did you watch it? Was this like become your favorite movie?
So I saw some of the Hitchcock classics growing up when I was a teenager. My mother was a huge film buff, having been an ex film student. So she showed me Psycho. I saw Psycho, The Birds, Rear Window. I actually have not gotten through Rope for some reason. I need to watch that. Vertigo. But for some reason, you know, Notorious was not one of those. And I was in a class in college. It was a cultural history class. And I don't even remember what the class was called. And why, I don't remember why she showed us this movie, because she was teaching us about propaganda. And it's definitely not propaganda, obviously. Yeah.
Of all the Hitchcock movies to show about propaganda, like, I would probably go with Foreign Correspondent and not like Notorious, but
yeah, right. I cannot remember what the context was, but I know that I saw it in this teacher's class, and that it the themes we talked about also made me think a lot about, like, we talked about the themes of water and drink and like awakeness and stuff like that. And it was really interesting seeing like the use of alcohol throughout the movie and it's all its different ways. And as I watched it this time, I was struck by the whole wine cellar aspect. Like, they start drinking. The first scene is basically Ingrid Bergman is completely shit-faced and drunk drives, and Cary Grant tries to act like he's not scared shitless and then knocks her out so that he won't die. Yeah. That's very romantic start.
After she gets really pissed off that he's like some kind of federal officer,
well, that's why,
you know.
Well, that's why he had to knock her out, because you know, she was being
practical solution.
She was being a difficult woman, so it all weirdly ties in. What?
She's a wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
God, I mean, you know, as an actor, I'm sure he endured a lot of, you know, hits and scrapes, and she was really landing some punches on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much a character.
The tension between them is just, I think the thing that struck me the most about the movie when I first saw it and every time I've watched it is the sexual tension.
Yes.
Between Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman is just like off the charts.
Yeah.
And in Hitchcock, it's so fun. And in movies of that time, it's so fun because they couldn't show that much sexiness, you know? Even the kisses had to be a certain way, because I think there was a rule about
Production code. It's called production code. You couldn't have a kiss more than 3 seconds. So they got around that. The kiss on the balcony overlooking Rio was they kissed and they talked and then they kissed and they talked, lasted 3 minutes. So they far exceeded the 3 second rule. But
yeah, totally danced around it. They do these insanely long whisper kiss scenes that are so hot because you're just like building and building and building and building. And she does these little moans and stuff. And it's just like, oh my God.
Hitchcock loved that kind of suspense anyway, you know, to build and build until they explode.
Which is funny because, like, that's like typically his ones are like his suspensers, like violent suspense or something, you know, thriller suspense. But he's also like, he's the master of like, you know, seduction suspense and stuff too, which I don't think a lot of people give him that much credit for. I don't, you know, like, I don't really hear it as much. So I loved hearing that here.
I mean, some of his movies are not as sensual, you know, like I love Rear Window and I love Grace Kelly, but she's just not like that.
No, you know what? She wasn't like that. But if you watch her with Cary Grant in To Catch a Thief, she was like that. From what I had dug some like thing about her was that she actually was not attracted at all to Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever, she just wasn't, you know, so you can kind of tell. Mm-hmm. And which drove me crazy because like I mean, I understand you got Jimmy Stewart and then you got Grace Kelly, and Grace Kelly's got to pretend like she's into somebody she's really not.
Well, it's called acting.
It's right, you know. But she didn't do very well in that particular movie for that stuff. I didn't buy it whatsoever, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's another reason why, because Rear Window is one of my least favorites, and I'm just a lot of people love it, and it's just I've seen that movie like 3 times and I've only watched it all the way through once. Like, it puts me to sleep.
I find it so relaxing. I don't know, it just has like that mystery cozy vibe. Like, there's just enough to keep your attention, and it's also like the slow burn. I mean, I think Hitchcock is such a master of kind of laying the scene and then getting all the little wheels rolling, and you're almost like, okay, well, I guess something's happening. I'm not sure exactly what. And then all of a sudden everything is happening and you're just completely in it and you're in over your head and you're like overwhelmed and you're stuck.
Right. Exactly. I totally agree with that. And I don't know, like this movie in particular had some scenes that, I mean, we talked about it before earlier with the drunk driving scene that definitely wouldn't play today. Like you couldn't make that scene.
Yeah.
You know, people would be flipping out. I remember seeing an review of License to Drive, by the way. License to Drive. Have you ever seen that movie with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman and whatever? But like there's a drunk driving scene that was supposed to be humorous. And Leonard Maltin, who used to do like movie review guidebooks and stuff, he absolutely trashed the drunk driving scene. So I'm just wondering, because I never read his thing for Notorious, if he found that interesting at all or if he hated it for that aspect of it. I don't know.
I mean, in those days in movies, I recently was on a little lake vacation, and we were watching I haven't watched television in like ages, but they had a TV. So I was like, okay, what's on TV? And I found Turner, and they were showing like all these like trashy, like sort of moral lesson type movies. They're so funny because it's like they're a moral lesson, like juvenile delinquency or something. But the director and the writers are just like, okay, let's see how trashy we can get. but man, women got smacked around like crazy. Mm. So she got off easy in this. He did not hit her. He just very gently and expertly somehow made her go unconscious.
Yeah. It almost seemed like he had a skill to do that. I mean, yeah. I'm guessing trained as a...
he's intelligent or whatever. Yeah. So he probably just like squeezed her neck in the right way.
There's a place on the neck that you can squeeze the sciatic nerve or something and it'll knock you out. I've had that happen to me.
What?
Really?
Somebody knocked you out? Yeah. Somebody knocked me out that way.
And wow. And like was, I mean, I want to hear more about this real quick. How did this happen?
Well, I was drunk and disorderly. One of the people, he was an expert in martial arts, and he put me to sleep. So I woke up later and, you know, thanked him for it because I was in a lot of trouble. So it ended okay. But
it's like the same situation.
Right. I was just thinking that. I was drunk and disorderly. And you weren't driving, were you?
No, okay. I was ready to jump off a radar's mast on a destroyer in the Navy.
Oh, shit.
Guy damn. Dropped me out and carried me down.
Well, he saved your life and everybody else's. So yeah. There you go.
Pretty crazy.
Successful.
So.
But yeah, so I just, yeah, this scene, yeah, you're right. They don't have like, you know, characters, like a lot of characters, especially like you look at movies like Gone with the Wind. You know, didn't he like slap her stuff and things like that?
And was totally like insulting too, like just
horrible. Hitchcock never really did that. Like Hitchcock, I don't know if that was a thing where, I don't know if it was an English thing where he like wanted to make sure people are treated, you know, like careful about that. Except the birds with the birds attacking Tippi Hedren. I don't know if he was really, you know, maybe later in life he became a little bit more violent.
They asked Sean Connery once, you know, would you ever hit a woman? He says, oh, absolutely. Depends on the situation. But they need to be kept in line. He got in a lot of trouble for that from work. He's kind of, what do you call it, chauvinistic. So I wanted to ask you about Carey real quick. He played that character very stiff and very stern, and not in his usual charming and carefree way. Now, I'm just wondering, did he go too far? Was it monochromatic? I mean, it seemed like everything was monotone. He was very flat in his delivery. Do you think that he went a little too far in that direction? Or should he have shown more inner turmoil? You know, because he loved her, yet he didn't want to be in love with a woman who would sleep around like that. She was very promiscuous, and so he was torn, but I don't think he played it as torn as he could have. So were you convinced that he was really had deep feelings for her?
I think I was the first times I saw the movie, I was definitely it's a point of frustration. Mm-hmm. But I think it is useful because then you see how she feels, that she's like, what the hell with this guy? And it, her tension is what you're really feeling. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when he comes through, you know, he's guarded. He's very guarded. Sure, so he doesn't trust her. He's like, I'm not going to fall for this broad. She's gorgeous. She's everything. I'm falling for her. So I'm not going to fall for her, you know, that kind of thing.
He restrained himself.
Yeah. Or at least doesn't show it. He's falling, but he's just not showing it. He's not showing his cards, you know, because he has to be secretive for his profession, and it's what keeps him alive. And at the end, it's what saves her life, because he's like, you know what, I'm not buying that story about her being drunk, and I don't like that she hasn't been showing up. And so he picks up on all the clues, and he's like, you know, I'm not going to believe her. She's lying to me. And I'm just going to, you know.
Yeah. But I will say that a lot of the love, like, you know, the stuff between them, I hate to say, maybe it's because I hadn't watched this in a while. And this was my first time like rewatching it, but I found him to be sort of like whiny, you know, like, he was a little whiny at times, like,
oh, yeah.
You don't, you know, oh, well, all you had to say was no. And, yeah. You know, you didn't say no. So guess what? You and I are not going to be together because you're going to be with him. And then I'm going to move to Spain and I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, I was like, man, he's a whiny James Bond.
He's playing games.
He's cruel. I think the cruelty covers his deep feelings and his hurt. Because, you know, he pushes her into another man's arms for sexual reasons. And that must hurt anybody that has to stand by and think, oh, my God, will I ever be able to do this? Or is she going to be with the other guy forever? So I think that he was sarcastic to cover his pain and his jealousy.
I think you bring up a good point. You know, I think he was passive aggressive. I think he was really passive aggressive.
Yeah. Well. And yeah, he was, but he was also, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to like say, because like his character, even though he's the lead of the film, it's really about her.
Yeah.
You know, she's the star of the movie. You follow her life.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, there needs to be tension. If there's not, if everything's fine with them, where's the tension?
Right. Where's the drama?
Then it's just tension about her, you know, doing her mission and being in danger. And it would just be kind of a dumb movie. You know, it'd be the kind of dumb movie somebody else would make.
You right. know? You're right. So there had to be a little bit of that, but it's just him, like the way he just said some of the stuff just made me go, what are you doing, you idiot? Like, why didn't, if she's, because I get it though. Like, I got it. When he said that she had to say, you know, she had to say it, he felt like, in a way, she didn't want him. Like, she did want the other guy too, or something. Like, she.
Well, it's like, it's the dance of love and seduction. It's this cat and mouse thing where, like, you don't want to show your cards. You want the other person to say, I love you first. You don't want to be the one who's just sitting there, you know, showing everything, and then you're left out in the cold, you know?
So he was torn between love of his country and love of this woman. And so it was, you know, there's so much complex inner commitment, or dynamics. Hitchcock, I think, loves to play people against each other. You know, it causes a lot of, complexity and suspense. Somewhere in my notes, I have it, but
You know, I absolutely, okay, so we have at the house, we have Casablanca, completely different movie, but also it's got Ingrid Bergman and Claude Rains, you know, and it's a fantastic love story.
They're both amazing in it as well.
Who?
I just read that these two movies pushed her over the top and made her immortal. these Casablanca in this particular movie, Notorious.
Yeah.
That immortalized her.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. Did she get an Oscar for this at all?
Notorious? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Nobody cares about Notorious.
I don't
think it was a flop. Did you guys know that? Like, it did not do well. And I think it was because at the time, the war, you know, there was a war going on and people didn't want to see this, you know?
That could be.
You know, which was not terrible timing, because like Hitchcock knew what he was doing, you know, when he made it, you know what I mean? But
it's a post-war movie. That surprised me.
I thought it was during the war.
No, it's after the war, 1946. It says that at the very beginning. In fact, he was very specific in the courtroom to show the date, the time, and the whole thing. And they were trying to stop the Nazis. Actually, he was writing a script about the communists, but they changed it to the Nazis because we were still in that fervor after World War II. You know, Nazis are bad and, you know, evil.
Nazis are way better villains.
Yeah. And you know what? They're still evil and bad, and people still make movies about them. So good choice.
Have you guys noticed the floor at his house? How it's like a chessboard?
I did not notice that. Did you notice that, Larry?
The floor?
The floor, the tiles at his house are like a chessboard.
I didn't notice that. Quite observant of you.
Did you notice that when you were watching it, like rewatching it? Like, did you pick up on that? Or
I don't remember if I noticed it or somebody else pointed it out to me. Okay. But it's interesting. Whenever you see the overhead shots, there's a few key big overhead shots. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to just like wonder about what people's placements mean. Like at the party, for instance, say Claude Rains and Ingrid Bergman's characters are the king and queen, though I guess the mother would really be the queen, but they're in the middle and they are completely unprotected. Everybody is like mulling around in the party. There's nobody around them, but there's nobody protecting them. So they're just like, I thought about it this time when I watched, they're both exposed. Claude Rains' character is in great danger of her, and she is in great danger with him. And nobody really knows what's actually happening. But yeah, it's interesting, next time you watch it, anytime there's a big overhead shot, just seeing where people are standing on the board and wondering what that could mean.
Oh, wow.
Now I definitely see, once again, a rewatch, you know? Yeah.
Like the ending, for example, is so tense and strange. And that is a bit of a chess moment, because it's like, you can't say, but you got to keep moving. You don't know what the other pieces are going to do. They could attack, you know?
Oh my God. So I wanted to talk about that ending, and I guess we'll talk about it right now, since you brought up the fact that it's fucking strange. It is a strange ending, because he goes and gets her, brings her down, and I'm like wondering this whole time, like, you know, why doesn't somebody say something or do something? Like,
why don't they just kill him?
Yeah, why don't they just kill him?
Because it's chess. It's chess. You can't just run around with guns blazing. You got to move the proper ways. If you're a knight, you can only go in that little L shape. If you're a pawn, you can move one foot in front. You can only kill diagonally.
I love that, because now that I'm watching it, I'm thinking in my head how they were coming down. It was like, it was, you know, there was the you know, there's Cary Grant, Ingrid Bergman, and then their mom was above, and then Claude Rains was next to Ingrid Bergman, so they're all three right there. So it was like, you know, and then the other people were over here, so the knights could have went like this or whatever if they wanted to, but they didn't. They stood.
Cary Grant is like the knight. He's literally her knight in shining armor. He comes in and rescues her.
That's amazing. Thank you for bringing that up, because I applaud Hitchcock even more. I mean, I'm hoping that's what they plan to do, but like, I never read anything about that, so I didn't know.
I haven't either. But, Yeah, I was
thinking about that because the knight can move in ways that none of the other pieces can move. You know, mm-hmm. the queen has the most mobility, I guess, of all the pieces, but she's also the most important. So you really have to protect her, and she has to take calculated risks.
Yeah.
The king is the most useless of the pieces because he can only move. He has freedom of direction, but that doesn't count for much when you are, if you
he's lose, a pawn.
You can't, you lose him, that's it.
Like, yeah, you lose him, that the game's over. Checkmate.
So. But the knight.
That mother was a fantastic
God. The mother is the queen. The mother is the queen. She's the one that can do everything. She has so much power. It's horrifying. She has all the keys.
But she did. So I'm glad that the Blu-ray I have has captions, you know, because there was a time where she was in there in the, you know, he's asking for the keys, you know, and you can't hear anything unless you turn everything up, you know, like really loud because they're really low talking or whatever.
He's telling him she won't give him the keys.
Yeah, exactly. But I read it succinctly on the thing, like, you know, I'm not going to give you the keys. They're going to stay with me. It was like, oh, just give them to me. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. I heard that too.
Yeah. But, and then
I love that scene where he tells his mother, mother, I think I married a spy. She takes a cigarette and shoves it in her mouth like a truck driver. And it was so funny. I laughed out loud. I'm like, oh my God, she acts so elegant, you know, but then she shoves it in her mouth and lights it. And like, here's what we're going to do. You know, we're not going to kill her right away. We're going to do it slowly. See, she talks out of the side of her mouth.
She's like one of those like 30s gangster mob.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for this moment, the glint in her face when he says that, she's like, I knew it. I knew it. I never trusted her. I know this.
Yeah, I knew it all the time. Yeah.
Oh, you could tell from the, that woman.
The first time she met her.
He's like, how come you didn't testify? And she's like, oh, my father didn't want me to. She's like, I wonder why.
No, she was polite, but she was suspicious and proving from the very beginning. So,
it's interesting seeing another overbearing mother figure in a Hitchcock movie.
Oh my God. Like, and especially with Cary Grant in the movie, like North by Northwest.
Because they always succumb.
Maybe, you know? Hitchcock had an overbearing mother. That's how he worked out his venom.
That makes sense. And these endings are always tragic. These poor men, they try to like another woman. They're like, and he said that Claude Rains is character. He's like, you just don't like any other woman that comes, you know, that comes into my life. And, you know, he was so proud and happy. He's like, yeah, I found this, you know, she's gorgeous. She's perfect. I'm going to do this. He feels like a real man with her, you know, because he's kind of a short guy. He's not, you know, maybe he's powerful, but he's not very good looking. He knows that, you know.
He's also kind of an idiot. Like, you know, I don't know if that sounds bad or not, but
I don't know. He figured out the cellar thing. So
he did. No, I mean, not saying like idiot like that, but like at the end of the movie, he tries to tell them, like, you know, he's like, hey, I want to come, you know, I want to come with you guys. They're like, oh, there's no room or whatever in the car.
Yeah, right.
You know? Totally. And I'm like, go around the back and get in, you know, just like, I'm coming in with you, you know, anyway.
You see the way he walked back in the house? He's like very meekly, like a lamb to slaughter.
Oh, he's dead. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're like, we have something to discuss with you. It's like, oh, I'm... You know,
maybe his mother will save him.
That's what I was thinking. I was just thinking that a second ago. I was like, maybe the mother would have already killed them. See, that's the indie I wanted to see.
No, she'll work out a deal with them or something.
Might have killed her mother too.
Oh,
what did you think about the wine bottle when the butler first screwed up with the wine? Did you understand what was happening? It's something that had to progress, right? I was mystified over why they would kill that guy over a wine bottle.
Because he gave too much information away about the uranium is what I got from it.
But nobody opened it. And, you know, it was just sitting there.
But he was freaking out too much.
Yeah.
You know, he was freaking out about it, which ticked her off, and she went to them. So, like,
that they don't trust. I mean, it's not like they're around strangers, though. They're all in on it. And the only people that aren't are the mother, who probably is in on it as well.
Well, the mother's in on it. It's got to be in on
it. Her. So I guess they're not wanting to show his bride any kind of irregularity so that she knows what's going on. So it was all about her. It was all about giving it away to her.
I didn't get the connection until later when he dropped the bottle and black sand all over the place. And I thought, what does black sand have to do with it? Then I thought, oh, uranium ore. So... Mm.
You know, so what is uranium ore for?
It's for A bombs, atomic bombs. It's plutonium. Nuclear fission.
So I read that Hitchcock actually went to Hitchcock and Ben Hecht, who wrote it, went to a expert to talk about it. Right. And they said they could not give them any information about how to actually build the bomb, but they did. The only thing he did say was that uranium could fit in a wine bottle. So that was the only thing he was allowed to physically say. So that's what they went with it,
And the big bosses had that meeting. They said there's a scientist living and working in that Sebastian's mansion. And I thought, oh, there it is. That's what they're doing. They're trying to, make an atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nazis were always trying to get that, but we got it first. Actually, this was after the war, they said. So I didn't understand the connection there. But anyway, we were in a race to get it before they did. So there's a lot of different things trying to connect the dots here. The OSS, are you familiar with that? The Office of Strategic Services? That was pre-CIA. That's what it was called in those days. And so that's who Cary Grant
was
working for. And his boss, and so they had to recruit this promiscuous woman to do something that would be fairly easy for her to do, but they didn't bank on Devlin falling in love with her.
Well, they didn't even know, I don't think, not at all. He never told them he was in love with her.
I know, which... he defended her honor when they're calling her a tramp and this and that. And, It's in my notes somewhere, but
they picked her because she was beautiful and she knew the guy. They knew she would be a good honey trap. Oh,
they had scorn for her. It was apparent in their voices. And then Cary spoke out and he said, "Well, you're Washington playing bridge with very upstanding, and she's risking her life." And the guy, "I don't approve of what you just said to me. I apologize."
So, which I thought was a little strange. I didn't find anything he said to be very disgusting or anything. I don't know. Why he got offended so much about the way, because I was like, wait, she's playing bridge with upstanding people.
She's not risking her life. She can afford to be, upstate and not promiscuous. And then a woman of loose morals. They said something like that, that this shouldn't be hard for her to do. And
that guy got really upset. Was like, why is this dude really that fucking mad? And it's those scenes in the old time movies where somebody says something, the guy just slaps him with a glove. How dare you disrespect me? That's what was gonna happen. Oh Lord.
What I don't get is why they say she's so all this stuff about her being a tramp, and she says it too, and I don't see any evidence of it.
Right. I mean, it's not like she flirted with anybody else ever. That's the thing. We never got any more of her backstory.
We just saw that first scene and
right.
Intimations of it though. She did sleep around quite a bit. She was quite proud of it. She told him at the racetrack, "Oh, I added another playmate to my list."
Yeah.
In spite, just to piss him off.
She's being sarcastic, though.
So,
yeah, she was just trying to piss him off. That was it.
He was so cruel to her, she had to be cruel back.
Right.
And then he did get pissed off, and you could tell that he did have feelings for her again. And then
I like that word. I wish I was single or dating or whatever, so I could talk like that.
I added another person to my list.
I love that. We're just playing.
There was some great quotes in this movie, by the way.
From the very first, I have one that she says, he's trying to recruit her, and she says, no, she refuses to do what he asks when he first meets her. to go to Brazil. And she said, "You patriots wave a flag with one hand and pick pockets with the other." That's true about America too, because they used to do a lot of that stuff.
I love my favorite one I posted on Facebook today, which was, "There's nothing like a love song to give you a good laugh."
Yes, I love that line. That's a great line.
I know, but she had some really great lines. Like, usually it's the male who gets all, and he had some good ones too. Like, he had I forgot what was the other one he had that I liked that was sort of a lot of his stuff is sort of messed up. You know, like, a lot of his quotes are sort of kind of fucked up quotes, you know. He was a dick. But it was because he loved her that he was being a dick, you know. It's kind of like when you're like a child, you know, and you start picking on somebody and everything, but you really actually like them, you know, like that's sort of what it reminds me of.
And then he goes out, he's going to go to Spain. And, you know, I thought, wow, that's like the ultimate insult to her, to get her involved and then just leave her there.
Yeah.
But he tried to protect himself again.
I mean, it's interesting because it's a battle. You're seeing the battle that you see with him is with, you know, really with just being a real man, you know, like being a mature man who stands by your woman, that is not scared to show his feelings, you know, like, and then at the end, he finally completes that arc and he comes through, and it's so satisfying to see after all his obnoxious behavior and blowing her off and insulting her, like, he finally steps up.
Yeah, I read somewhere that a lot of people were sympathizing with Sebastian more than Devlin at some point, because, you know, he's like the cuckold, he's being fooled. He's being played, and Devlin's kind of manipulating the whole thing, but both of them suffered.
That's good, because it shows duality, you know. You're never going to have flat characters in a Hitchcock movie.
Oh, no.
You know, and Claude Rains, and, you know, what's his name? What's Claude Rains' character? I keep calling them by the actors' names.
Which one? Yeah. What was his name?
The big boss?
Yeah, the Claude Rains' character. Alexander.
Alex Sebastian.
Yeah.
I guess they never really say his name much in the movie.
Well, they say Sebastian a lot. Sebastian, you know?
They call him Sebastian. Whatever. You do feel sorry for him, you know? He's got this horrible mother who's like completely controlling and you know, he's kind of stuck in this situation. And he's falling for her, and he's totally a sucker. And you know, he does love her, and he is really trying to treat her well. But then you kind of lose sympathy for her when he starts to fucking poison her. You know, it's like, okay, he's not that nice. You see, he's not that nice. Oh,
that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, when she discovers they're poisoning her. And that somebody almost reaches over her shoulder to take her cup. And both Sebastian and his mother go, "No, not that one." Because bing, the light comes on. He realizes they're poisoning me.
Yep. And then
it's such a chilling, horrifying moment. And once again, back to the chess thing, like, she can't show anything. She can't show that she knows anything. She has to just stay where she is because it's not her move. She doesn't have a move.
It's also like a poker thing.
Moves. They've taken away all her moves. She's trapped. It's absolutely horrible.
The door and falls over, and they put her in bed, cut the cord, take the telephone.
Yeah, that's it.
And so she's trapped.
You're like, all right, that's it. She's screwed.
That was one of my favorite like little lines in the movie too. Is like when the people start piecing it together at the end, and they're like, "There is no phone in the upstairs."
Yeah.
And then they're like, we're going to need to talk to this guy.
You know, I thought later, why does that make a difference? If we're going to take her to the hospital, we don't need a call. Just take her to the hospital.
So, well, no, but it was, I thought that Devlin was.
How did Devlin come, though? How did he know to come to?
Right.
Or when, I don't know.
It was more of the long lines of, they were starting to piece everything together, you know, that, because they were saying, they were trying to make up an excuse why he came, and is now taking her to the hospital, right?
Well, so, what's interesting is that the red herring, the reason that Cary Grant's character realizes something's wrong is because she misses her meeting time with him. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, 5 days.
They should have thought of that. If she is a spy, she's probably going to be having meeting times with her handler. So like that was a total like drop the ball.
Moment. I think they were also thinking she'd be dead before, you know.
Well, they were doing a gradual kill, so she was not going to be dead. They were making sure it was going to take a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting. So we watched Shadow of a Doubt. Larry and I did that. We did that episode already. And in that movie, they have a discussion. Two of the characters, one was Hume Crone, and then the guy that you liked, Larry, that you said, I think you said, look like you or something, you know, or you get a lot of a, Henry Travers. They have this conversation together about poisoning somebody, right? And how long it would take and how it would drag out. Like I could poison you, you wouldn't even know it. And I could poison you for a long time, you know, or whatever. And I could just keep putting poison in your thing. And then he does a movie where they use that as like a thing, you know? So well, I thought that was kind of cool.
Arsenic and Old Lace too? Did Hitchcock do Arsenic and Old
No,
Lace?
No, no.
Oh, somebody That's, else.
Okay, but, somebody else.
Okay, but he does prefer poison, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there you go. The other thing is we talked in the last episode, Dial In for Murder, about the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin in that movie was a key. And this one, it's the wine bottles full of uranium, and the MacGuffin basically is just a device used in his movies. People have I read this article today, and one of the things they talked about was the MacGuffin. There's a MacGuffin in like Titanic, like the necklace or whatever in Titanic. You know, that's nobody like. Everybody in the world cares about it, yet nobody really cares about it. None of the audience really, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't, you know, mean anything to the audience, but means something to the characters. That's exactly what is the MacGuffin in this is like, we don't know what's in that. They also, I had to disagree with these people. They also said there's a MacGuffin in Pulp Fiction with the suitcase with the stuff in it. I don't really find that to be a MacGuffin. I don't know. Like,
I mean, we don't know what's in it.
We don't know what's in it, nor do we, but we do actually care about that. Yeah. You know, we really,
I mean, the bottle is pretty crucial to the plot here. It's pretty much the central key.
Right. Speaking of key, you know, there, that key, the key scene with her, you know, her having it in her hand.
Oh, God.
And then, oh, that scene was so tense and great. Oh,
drop.
Yep, I know. Which it is actually on the cover of the can't find it right now, but there's the cover of the Blu-ray has the back and the key, you know, really? Basically. Yeah, it's a Criterion Blu-ray, so they really.
It's an interesting shot.
Yeah, of all the shots, I mean, you know, there's been some great posters for that movie, you know. There's one where, and my favorite one is the one I'm going to post today when I explain to everybody that we watched this movie or whatever, is one with a big key, and then it's got Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman in the, you know, in between the key. And I'm like, I mean, it kind of gives away a little bit, you know, that there's, you know, but nobody knows really what that key means, you know?
Yeah.
So, but, all right, so all in all, Larry, did you have some more stuff you wanted to make sure to mention?
I was reading that Hitchcock liked to manipulate elegant women in the situations of great danger. And that's a common theme in a lot of his movies. He seemed to delight in that, maybe for a personal reason. I don't know. And then I already talked about the longest kiss in the history of movies, 3-minute kiss, which wasn't really a 3-minute kiss, but so we talked about Hitchcock earlier, Jonathan, about where I found him in the movie. He was at the party drinking champagne. Did you see him, Lisa? Did you see Hitchcock?
No, I missed it.
Yeah, he was drinking right when they had a zoom in on the champagne because they're running out.
Yes.
And then they backed up and then they took one of the guy drinking champagne. That was Hitchcock.
Ah, man.
Just took a quick drink and turned around and left.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, so, once again, another good thing, if you rewatch the movie, you can pick up on those things or whatever. So next time I watch it, I'm going to be looking for Hitchcock and chessboard, floors.
That's right.
Lisa, do you actually have a copy of this, or do you, or did you have to rent it or something?
I rented it. I actually had a VHS, but I did not watch it. That's in a box somewhere.
You watched it on Tubi, or
yep, yeah.
It is on Tubi, so if anybody wants to watch it for free, you can watch it on Tubi. I love that Tubi is putting a bunch of Alfred Hitchcock movies on there.
That's great. I'm gonna
look for that.
I'll watch more.
Next one, but
Larry ordered it from Netflix because he still does the DVDs on Netflix.
Oh my God, they still do that?
I'm very retro because I'm kind of allergic or sensitive to Wi-Fi. So everything's cabled in my house, so I can't do that. I can't stream. So
wait, are you actually allergic to Wi-Fi?
Yeah. What do you mean? My pulse in my head hurts and my heart pounds and I feel like I'm having a stroke.
Are you sure you weren't abducted by aliens?
No. This is real. It's like 3% or 1% of the population is very sensitive. I'm like a canary in a coal mine. That all this radiation is actually bad for us, but I'm the only one that can really feel it.
Whoa. So
they have a town in Minnesota where people go like me and they don't have any electronics at all in the city. So I'm almost at that point where I can't go to the library when everybody has their laptop. I have to leave.
I can't live without Wi-Fi. I'm sorry. I
can't live without Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I'd probably just end it if that were the case for me. I'd just be like, I'm done. Sorry, guys.
Unplug, though. It's nice. You know,
it's going to get worse when you get the new 5G all in.
I went to the lake and I was just like laying by a lake, reading a book. It was nice. Didn't have my phone.
Yes, I love that. Unplug completely.
Yeah, it's necessary.
Yes, actually, it is. So anyway, they said something about the MacGuffin you were talking about. There really wasn't anything. Well, there was one, but The basic story is about two men in love with one woman. That's basically what this is all about. And everything else is just an artifice. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because, this is probably, I would say this is probably Alfred Hitchcock's most romantic movie.
Yes.
He's got some movies that have a lot of romance in them. Spellbound is sort of romantic in times and a couple of the other ones he's done. But like this one is definitely like the most romantic of them. And Cary Grant is like probably one of the most perfect, like leading men, I think. I've been trying to recently watch more of his movies, you know, that I haven't seen. So just because I've always there's only one I did not like and I thought I was gonna love it, and it was it's the one where the tiger or whatever is loose and
Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah Bringing Up Baby. I just was not a huge fan of that movie, and I think it's because I didn't buy Cary Grant as this like nerdy kind of guy. Like Jimmy Stewart should have played that character. I don't know. It's my least favorite, but a lot of people love that movie. So
I think this is his most romantic movie. The other movie has big, like, I don't know, but Vertigo is more about obsession. It's not really love.
Oh, it's not definitely. I don't feel like it's love at all. Yeah. It's obsession. Cause he's not like, he doesn't love her really. He's like obsessed with what she brings, you know, like infatuated by her.
The idea.
Yeah. So I would not.
Vertigo. That's another movie that is just like so deep with symbols, the spirals and everything. Like, it's just replete.
We will probably do that next season. because what we're trying to do is do more of these ones that don't get discussed.
Yeah.
And then the last episode of the season will be like the popular movies, right? Or the whatever. So the first one this year is obviously going to be Psycho, because and I think that's really good with a lot of theme of mothers and stuff and the stuff that we've been discussing.
Yeah, Psycho is a blast. Psycho is so rewatchable, like still to this day. It's just such a fun movie.
We should do that for Mother's Day.
Well, that's all then. Damn it. Why didn't we do that the last, you know?
Who doesn't want to put their mother in a cellar sometimes?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and talk to her, you know, constantly, like when she's not there, you know, or dress up like her. I mean, you know, whatever. You do what you got to do, right?
I'm more in the put her in the cellar.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Damn. Well, I guess I'm probably the only one then. There you go.
You love your mother.
I was trying to think of another romantic one. Rebecca's sort of it's sweet and romantic. I don't know. It's very ghostly and haunting.
I was watching the remake of Rebecca.
What was that like? Because I don't know how well it stuck with the themes or anything.
Got bored.
Oh really? Yeah.
Alfred did. I don't know.
Alfred did probably a lot better, you know.
Yeah. All these remakes are kind of, I don't know. I feel like I saw the Dial M for Murder one, but I'm not sure. The remake. I don't know.
Oh yeah. They did do a remake of that, didn't they? We talked about that, I think. Yeah, I don't think there was any other romantic ones. So
I'd like to see somebody try to do Rear Window. That'll be hilarious.
They did. They've done multiple versions of it in a way. Like it wasn't, they don't call it Rear Window, but like was it Disturbia, I think, with what's his name? Shia LaBeouf, where he's like he sits at a window and watches his, like, you know. And then there's another one. There was a horror version of it with Matt McCoy called Abominable, where like he's watching his neighbors across and they're getting killed by a Sasquatch. It's pretty awesome. Wow. You know? Yeah. And he's in a wheelchair, I believe. Oh, I'm correct. Okay. So I think they really tried to do.
Those aren't really remakes though. Those are like, I don't know, something else.
Yeah,
I guess horrible shot by shot remake of Psycho, for example. Like that was
okay. That's a remake, but that's like, yeah, that's a terrible
travesty.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn is no Norman Bates. No offense, like he's too tall. You know, like there's, you know, Tom Cruise could probably have been Norman Bates.
I think Psycho just needs to be in black and white. You know, I mean, Hitchcock made the choice to make it in black and white, and there was color, plenty of color film at that time. He chose to make it in black, of course, possibly because it was cheaper also, but
no. I've heard a lot of it's because of the blood, you know, in the shower, because blood in the shower in color does not look nearly as good as if you put, like, I think they use like chocolate syrup. You know, yeah. So it looked great, you know.
Yeah.
Visually, yeah, true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect. They got to play around with Janet Leigh's lingerie and stuff. Like, you know, how she has like white underwear first. And then when she's leaving, she's got black underwear because she's now like bad. She's
the bad girl.
You know?
It's big on lighting. The character from light to dark moods and things. So anyway, what did you think about Louis Calhern playing the big boss? Have you seen him in other things? The guy that played the boss of Devlin. I've seen him in other movies, but he's a pretty good actor. But
I didn't recognize him. I might have seen him in other stuff, but
see what else he's done. But
real quick, I did want to mention that I do have the 4K of Psycho now. They've got 4Ks of Psycho, North by Northwest, Rear Window, and The Birds. But they're gonna start putting all the other, you know, big name titles on 4K.
I want to explore some of the earlier works that he did. Have you seen all of his movies or just the popular ones?
Oh, Lisa.
I've definitely not seen all his movies, but yeah, I've seen some of the earlier ones.
Lesser known. Hopefully we can get them. You know, there's still
Strangers on a Train.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what came before that.
His early works in England might be interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
See if he's always been that macabre, that morbid. I think that's
probably, I think so.
Yeah. He's got a very twisted mindset.
Yeah.
Brilliantly so.
I mean, I think he's kind of a sadist with the audience as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what
he loves to torture people, that's for sure.
I think that's what gets him off, like just getting you in the situation where you just think,
especially,
you think you understand what's going on and you're like, okay, I get it. I get what's happening here. And then you're like, oh shit, I totally don't get what's going on here.
I think he either had problems sexually, either psychologically or physically.
Like all of the above.
Sex with his wife, I know that.
What?
So he didn't have, they were platonic.
Really?
So he had some kind of a twisted, what do you call it? A voyeur thing going on.
Yeah.
With actresses and he wanted to have sex, but he couldn't. He didn't have enough bravado to actually try it.
You couldn't get hard?
Probably impotent as well. So, but then.
Being overweight doesn't help. He was pretty overweight. That's going to kill your testosterone, all that cortisol. Yeah,
he had 100 pound range. And he had a suit for every 10 pounds.
Yeah, so, he probably ate instead of.
Yeah, probably.
Gotta put that energy somewhere.
Yeah.
That sucks.
In private, but
that makes me sad. Everybody should have a at least semi-healthy sex life.
Yeah.
It's so necessary for mental health.
I agree. I think everybody would agree with you on that.
But then maybe you wouldn't have these sexy, weird, fucked up movies.
Right.
Yeah. Because, maybe...
Hitler could have been an artist. We wouldn't have had World War II. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
He did make those very nice uniforms, though.
Well, on that note, I do want to mention one thing before we wrap up. But there was I read this trivia. This is awesome. After filming had ended, Cary Grant kept the famous Unica key. You know, a few years later, he gave the key to his great friend and co-star Ingrid Bergman, saying the key had given him good luck and hoped it would do the same for her. Many years later, at a tribute to director Alfred Hitchcock, Bergman went off script and presented the key to him, to his surprise and delight.
Aww.
So I'm wondering who has the key now. Like, where is that? In the words of Indiana Jones, it belongs in a museum. You know,
that's incredible. Yeah, I would love to see that key. That's so fun.
Yeah, it's a fun little trivia. It made my heart go that Cary gave it to Ingrid, who gave it to they kept it in the family.
He said that it gave him good luck too.
Yeah, I mean, well,
so it's like a magical key.
It is, and you know what? It probably gave her a lot of good luck too. I mean, her career kind of kept going after that. She was great.
Didn't she have some problems though with the press or the public, because she had a baby out of wedlock, which was not done in those days.
I'm sure.
She
would end up being the hottest baby on the planet though, so it all worked out.
Who's the baby?
That's right.
Isabella Rossellini.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because I thought so, but I wasn't sure. Because I remember hearing that, but
the only person that's hotter than Ingrid Bergman is Isabella Rossellini.
So she was real hot and then she was not for a while.
I mean, that Nordic with the Italian, it's like, it's an Italian Ingrid Bergman, basically.
So is that your favorite, is Ingrid Bergman your favorite Alfred Hitchcock actress?
Yeah, I would say so.
Mine is Grace Kelly. Sorry. Well, at least looks, I've always been attracted.
I find her a little boring. I don't know.
Yeah, she's a little stiff. But
I don't know. Watch To Catch a Thief.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I'll watch that.
I think it's because, I literally think it's because Cary Grant brings it out of her, you know, of like
he's a tasty man.
Well, it's also, he's just very charming and yes. very like his and his like and you're right, Larry. In this movie, he's a little bit more stiff, you know, than he normally is or whatever. But if you watch To Catch a Thief, he's way more like him in North by Northwest than he is in like this in To Catch a Thief. And I really enjoyed both of them together in that movie.
Maybe I'll watch that tonight.
Yeah, it's on, I think it's on Tubi or was on Tubi. So
did you end up watching the movie about Grace Kelly that I told you I was watching?
I watched some of it, and I did get to see the beginning of it. Had a guy playing Alfred Hitchcock and everything. I thought that was really cute. But I didn't get to watch all of it. Honestly, Nicole Kidman is no
it's Grace not Kelly. Good casting. I don't know why they didn't cast Gwyneth Paltrow. She looks almost exactly like Grace Kelly. I mean, enough. She looks
She looks a lot more like her than Nicole.
I mean, wasn't she in the remake of like something? One to Catch a Thief? Did they do or Dial M for Murder? Dial M for Murder.
Well, she probably was.
She was in that.
I'd have to find out real quick.
But she's got that look. She's got that, you know, that patrician icy blonde kind of look.
Maybe
she look.
But Grace Kelly wasn't that large, right? But
well, yeah, but in the movies you can't tell what size people are.
Yeah, and she did like, I mean, they did a good job kind of making Nicole Kidman look, you know, feel like her or whatever, I guess. But
it was weird casting. It was very weird casting.
They did as good of a job as they could. I just like, I mean,
I love Nicole Kidman. I just don't think she looks remotely like Grace Kelly.
Yeah.
But it was really sad. I didn't know a lot of the details of her life. It's kind of heartbreaking.
How did I not know that Gwyneth Paltrow was the young Wendy in Hook? How do I not?
Holy crap. What?
Yeah. That's what it says in the casting.
Oh my God. That was so long ago.
I got to be in Hook.
You were in Hook?
I was in extra, but it was during the.
Cool.
That last scene of the movie, right? It's a baseball game or something.
Nice.
I have an interesting story about that. I took a picture of Robin Williams with my camera, and that was not allowed. So somebody saw and told him, and so he had first Dustin Hoffman come up and stand there and see if I'd take a picture of him so they could catch me.
Oh no.
And then, because I knew the game was afoot, you know, then they brought out the big guns, the director himself.
Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, Spielberg. And he came and looked right at me, and I still wouldn't pull it out. So I got away with it. But
then whoa.
I got a picture of Robin Williams, and he had a tantrum. He hates that when somebody takes. So I've learned you just don't do that anymore. But
God.
It's even worse now. Like, I mean, because of the internet, because everybody wants to keep all the film secret and let you know. But back then, just taking a picture of Robin Williams, you couldn't put it online or anything for Hook.
Well, they didn't have line back then.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There was no internet. Was that?
Well, there was, but you know, I never thought of doing anything like that. But
yeah.
Anyway,
there were tabloids. There's always been printed tabloids.
I guess.
Yeah.
You call the newspaper, you tell them, you know.
Yeah.
I've got something for you.
I got the scoop.
I got the scoop for you. Scoop of the century. Here you go. You know. Robin Williams on set of Hook. You know.
Isn't it crazy to think about like the old days of media, like in the 30s with like, what was it? What's her name? Is it Hedda Hopper? Am I thinking
of that? Exactly. And Luella Parsons.
Luella Parsons, like they were like the queens of it all. They ran the media. They ran like celebrity media.
They could destroy you. And so they did a few people.
It's so crazy to think like back then how much control there was, and now it's like anybody can make their own website and post their own pictures and do whatever they want.
Yeah.
So, yep. That's why people are a little bit more like, you know, if you go on set, like when I was on set for the Lifetime movies I did, I made sure not to take out my phone unless I was just texting on it or whatever. But you can like go around, and I didn't even say, you know, even if I made my profile private, I wouldn't even said, you know, I'm on set of this movie, because just in case, you know, I didn't want to get in trouble for that, you know.
Marvel. How was that doing those movies?
I just got to see me in one. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. It just aired tonight. It was fun. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's a fun experience, because if you're an extra, you're just literally just there to eat and hang out. You know, sometimes you don't eat,
Didn't you play a corpse in one of them or something? Played a dead person?
Did I? I'm trying to think. I
don't know why I feel like I remember you saying that.
I don't think when I went to LA I did. Did I? Okay. But I played dead people before.
Okay.
So I might have told you that.
So what's the title of the movie?
It's called Lethal Love Letter. You know, it's on Life.
I love that. Okay, I'll watch.
Sounds juicy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a, okay. I mean, I didn't get to see, I only watched my part, you know, and then I came up here to do this podcast, and I was like, I'm recording it. I'll watch the rest of it later. But, you know, my part actually came in pretty early on. So I was like, oh, good. You know, it was like less than 10 minutes in, you know, you get to, like, I was in a wake scene where somebody was dead, you know, and shit. So I just got to, I looked really angry. Like, I did not realize how bad I looked. I looked angry, and I thought I was sad. And I looked at it. I was like, why do I look angrier than I, like, I'm surprised the director didn't go, why is that dude looking angry? Tell him to.
Are you not supposed to look angry?
I mean, I was at a wake. I was hearing this guy tell the story about these love letters that he would get, these romantic love letters he would get, and they were sad. It was sad, you know, that he didn't get to give his wife or, you know, his deceased wife a love letter he was planning to give her or whatever, which I don't know where that's going to come in play later. Are love letters going to become like the thing to give the main girl or something? But it was really cool, because just I got to work with Claire Grant. Well, not work with her, you know, I didn't have any like lines or anything with her, but you know, she walked right by me, you know, in the scene. So it's pretty cool, you know. I mean, she liked my tweet to her.
No, I'm glad shooting is back. It's great to see shooting again. Yeah. I was up in Saratoga. They were shooting something with Owen Wilson. I didn't get to see him, but
were they wearing masks still?
Back then.
When was it? Did you see it?
It was a few weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago or something. There was a whole crowd gathering watching them. And then here in Troy, they're shooting an HBO show called The Gilded Age, which is from the same creator as Downton
Abbey.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't say it.
It is hard.
I was saying downtown, and it's not. Downton Abbey.
I used to think it was Downtown Abbey.
Yeah, I totally thought. I did a post too where I said Downtown Abbey like an idiot. But yeah, so they converted, because Troy, you know, Troy has a lot of old buildings and stuff. So they converted like a little street corner. They put dirt, and they put all these like old fake storefronts. Like there's like candy shop. There's like hats, shoes, cigars. I love it so much. I got to see the actors in costume coming in to shoot the other day.
That's so sweet. I love that stuff. Like, so cool. You know,
leave it like that. I wish they would just like leave it like that forever. Like, I wanted to just stay like that.
Sadly, it probably won't be, you know. Mainly, you know, what is it? We were watching Shadow of a Doubt, and they had to, and we talked about this on the show before, so I'm gonna repeat it. But basically, there's a scene in Shadow of a Doubt inside a house, and they loved the house because the house was like a specific way. But then the people who own the house were like, oh, we got to make it like look good for them. And when Hitchcock got it, he was like, wait a minute. This didn't look like it did before. Now we gotta go and make it look like it was bad, like originally.
Did they remodel it?
They had to, yeah.
Oh, that's so dumb.
They even mowed the grass, and he had to wait for the grass to grow back.
That's so funny.
Dirty up the house because they painted it.
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that's so funny.
For sure.
I hate when people do bad renovations, though, on old houses. Like, I don't get it. Like, you'll see old houses. You know, Zillow is like my new addiction, like looking at, fantasizing about different houses I might live in or whatever. And I love old houses. And then I'll look inside, like the exterior is like 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s. I look inside and it's all new. I'm like, why would I want to live here? Like, this is insane. Like, utilities, you know, you want a new kitchen, you want a new bathroom, you know,
right.
Like, if there's like nice, what's it called? The stuff in the corners or the ceiling, whatever. You know, you want to see all the detail, you know?
Wait, like, so you want a new bathroom? You don't want to go to the bathroom in the outhouse?
Yeah. I want a new bathroom that looks like an old bathroom. So like, I want a clawfoot tub, but that's new.
Oh, okay.
Well, if it's old and still in good condition, great, you know?
Right. You don't want it to be like falling down on you.
Yeah,
or anything, but you do. You know, that would be bad.
Kitchen, like they used to have, like a big tin tub.
Well, now you can get appliances that look like they're old fashioned, but they're brand new. You can get stove. I actually got a old fashioned looking refrigerator for my house here because the kitchen was so tiny, and a normal size fridge would just take up the whole room. So I was like, here we go. Here's my chance. And I actually got one that matches the original 1950s tile. So it's all like this, like mint green.
Interesting.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, I think this is about wraps it up. Is there anything that we didn't get a chance to say that we would like to make sure gets spoken about? Larry, I know you had notes. So I want to feel bad.
We covered most everything.
Yeah. I think this is a really great show. I really enjoyed everybody's opinions on this. Like, because I feel like we probably all agreed on it. It's going to be hard because at the end of the series of this podcast, at the end of the season, I want to do like a kind of a, like our favorites, you know, kind of thing. Like what, you know, ranking them in the order or whatever and stuff. And that's really hard because each one I watch, I feel like it gets better and better, you know, like Dialing for Murder was better than Shadow of a Doubt, which was better than Lifeboat used to be my favorite one. And now,
yeah,
you know, and whatnot.
I still like Lifeboat a lot because he did so much with so little and a confined space like that, but it accentuates human tension and interaction. Because it's such a
beautifully filmed for a movie that's like shot basically in one location. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was like a beautiful play, you know?
I love the camera work in Notorious. I think the first time I really saw like really neat camera work in a movie, even though I've watched quite a bit of experimental movies, would be when Ingrid Bergman's character first wakes up from her first hangover, and you have those low angle, weird, twisty shots of Devlin
walking, and then you see it kind of cocking, like as if the camera was her, you know, point of view, which once again is a Hitchcock theme, sort of. You know, he likes points of view. We sort of in the horror genre, you know, as horror filmmakers, like I'm a horror filmmaker, so we kind of take for granted how many times we see movies where the point of view of the killer, you know, or whatever, you know, but like we should all attribute that to, I feel like, to Hitchcock, because Hitchcock used to do that a lot for a lot of his films. Yeah. Is focus on, you know, like all, you know, all the turning and twisting and all that stuff.
What did you think of the special effects when she realized she was being poisoned? She staggered out and fell, and you know, all those special effects things. He didn't use much of that before that, did he?
Yeah, no. And that was amazing. Like them shooting, and you kind of, I don't know what it was. It was like a negative exposure or something.
Thing, I don't even know what you call that kind of stuff, but there are two black images, and then it was an out distorted reality, and her
yeah,
was all screwed up.
And nowadays it would be like CGI or whatever, and they did that all like in camera, you know, yes. Like didn't yeah. have those kind 46. Of stuff. So, well, you know what I was thinking about? Like Hitchcock would probably hate today because it's so easy, but he would also probably have so much fun. Like if you could watch a actually, yeah. no, I take that back because like his last movie that he did, unfortunately, before he passed was terrible to me. Family Plot.
I think he was freed by restraint. You know, he's like Houdini. He uses the social restraints to mm-hmm. push the boundaries.
He thumbs his nose at the conventions of society.
Nope.
Yeah. But how do you do that if you're... if there's nothing to push against.
Yeah.
Right. No idea.
I mean, I think I saw, what was the, one of his movies, Frenzy, where it was like kind of more sexy and violent. The guy killed.
It looked more graphic, yeah.
You know, it was okay, but.
But see, that's the thing. It's like, you know, we already had a Dario Argento, you know. Mm-hmm. We didn't need Alfred Hitchcock to be like, try to be like Dario Argento, and I think that was
Argento was trying to be like Hitchcock.
Right, Argento was trying to be Hitchcock, while Hitchcock at that particular moment I think was trying to be Argento.
Yeah, and it is pretty giallo. Yeah
so it's great that he tried something new and different. Yeah. And he kind of, I think he tried to get back to the success sort of a Psycho, you know, but it, and especially because okay, it's about a psycho and it's called Frenzy. So it's one word, just like Psycho. I feel like there's a lot of like, similarities between the two, but it's
less careful, less layering.
And less interesting, you know, like I feel like a lot of what makes Psycho interesting is the, is the layering of the character and the plot and the, and the fact that they did he was the first M. Night Shyamalan. He did like the twists before, you know, anybody else did. But the biggest twist in that movie, I feel like, is that, spoiler alert if you haven't seen Psycho, but the main character, who we think is the main character because we're following her for half a movie, for like an hour of the movie, and then she gets killed in the shower scene, you know, or whatever. You know, so the rest of the movie follows somebody else who we've never met before. That had never been done before.
Yeah. My mother told me, I don't know if it's true or not, but she said that, I guess she had heard this in her film class or something, I don't know, that at that time, it was still customary to arrive like 10 minutes late to a movie. Like it wasn't a big deal to not be there at the beginning. And that was kind of a way to, and they had to make a special like announcement, like you better be here at the beginning, like, or you're gonna miss it, you know? So it was exceptionally unexpected.
Oh, from what I've understood.
I mean, I couldn't imagine watching a movie, like say a new movie that just came out, you know, this year, and I'm watching the theater and it's got a main character that's clearly the main character. All signs indicate they're the main character. And then 10 minutes in, they're killed. Like I would still be completely shocked, but I can't even imagine the level of shock at that time.
So what I heard, and I think this is what your mother might've been kind of alluding to, but there is they actually shut the doors and locked them so people could not come in after the movie had just begun. And they did that because they didn't want, what they didn't want was somebody going in, coming in late and finding out the twist. Yeah. They wanted people to hear about it after or something, know, or whatever.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, it totally, like, I love that. I think that was awesome.
Yeah, it was totally breaking all expectations.
Exactly. Well, I just want to thank you guys so much. This is an awesome conversation. Lisa, we definitely want to have you back at some point. I don't know. We'll figure another movie for you to watch with us, but we'll definitely, right, Larry? Like, she was definitely very insightful on this. So
absolutely.
appreciative. Great. And Larry, thank you so much once again. This show, I started this show because Larry and I were talking about how we wanted to review good movies, you know, because we've done a lot of bad movies. And
those stuff. Are fun too.
Those are fun too, but you know, like we want to try to talk about stuff that we love and enjoy, and instead of just making a whole movie or a show about movies, we all different genres and things, we just decided to make it all about Hitchcock. And that way we could get a chance to watch Hitchcock movies.
I mean, it's a massive body of work, so that's
well, it's going to take us 7 years, but we'll do it.
Well, yeah, it might take us six years.
7 times 12.
Have you guys read that interview that Truffaut did with him?
Yes. Which one? Like, because he made a whole book. Like, yeah, I have that book.
That's what I mean, the book.
Yeah, I have the book. I have that book. I have.
I had it. I don't know where the heck it went.
I don't know where any of mine go to. It's funny.
I need to have it. I thought that was so fascinating, their conversation.
I do too. Like, Truffaut loves his movies.
Yeah. Well, all the French New Wave people were like obsessed with Hitchcock.
So he had watched all his movies, like all of them, every single one.
You know, you didn't see many American directors at that time who were stylists.
Actually, technically, he's a British director who did for American movies. You know, he and probably one of the only British directors to be called to America at that time. And nowadays, you know, English directors are asked a lot, but like, you know what I mean? So
that's true. Yeah, he's very British. He's definitely very British. That wry dark humor and all that stuff.
I love his humor.
Yeah, it's great. It's deliciously wicked.
And you don't see that like back then, really. Even the comedies. Back then, I was watching Father of the Bride, the original, and I was like, like, I prefer the Steve Martin one. And maybe that's just because
a lot of movies were really bland. You know, you really weren't getting anything that interesting. Honestly, the horror movies were where you're going to get, and sci-fi, you're going to get interesting stuff going on.
The B movie stuff. You know?
The movies that were considered not the good movies.
Yeah, they're more fun. I don't know. That's because they
somehow made it out of the movie ghetto. Like he wasn't, you know, he was just classy enough, I think. I don't know. Though probably a lot of people thought his movies were trashy.
Well, I think it's also what you brought up before is the freedom of restraint, because people sort of let him do what he wanted to do instead of like telling him you can't do. Like I remember hearing about Rebecca. And thank God David O. Selznick was distracted with Gone with the Wind at the time, because had he not been distracted with that, he would have like been all up on Hitchcock. And had he been all up on Hitchcock, Hitchcock wouldn't have been able to do a lot of the things that he had more freedom and control over. So I think that was the thing. So
Gone with the Wind and was Selznick also involved in Wizard of Oz?
Wizard of Oz, I believe.
That was like, I think, didn't everybody involved both those movies just have a nervous breakdown? Like,
yeah,
it was just like a nightmare.
It's a horror story.
I mean, Gone with the Wind. One of my friends loves that movie, and
Victor Fleming burst a blood vessel in his eye.
I wouldn't be shocked. It honestly, I watched it last year for the first time, and I was doing it for a podcast I wanted to do, where I would, and I may still do this at some point, but I wanted to have a podcast where I talked about the AFI 100. So I did a podcast where I would watch them and then review them, you know, starting from 1 to 100. I want to go 100 to 1, but 1 to 100. And that way, if I want to stop at 10, I could just say I did the first top 10, you know, or whatever. But I tried watching Gone with the Wind. I was like, why is this everybody's favorite movie? Like, it's so long and it's.
I mean, she's great in it. I love watching her be a brat. I could watch her be a brat all day.
Like, she was so cute. Incredible. I loved her. But I mean,
super bipolar too. Like,
in real life or in the movie?
Yeah, real life. Yeah.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. I need to dive more into like people's
There's a picture I love of Marilyn, Arthur Miller, Vivian Leigh, and Laurence Olivier when Marilyn was doing Prince and the Showgirl. Wow. It's quite a group right there.
A guy I just interviewed, Alan Brent, he's an amazing actor, told me he was in Dubai doing, I don't know if he was doing a play or doing a film or something, you know, but he was in a bar with Danny Boyle, Danny Glover, and Nick Cage.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he said everybody went around the room and, or, you know, bought everybody a round of drinks. When it got to Nick Cage, he got up and left. You know, and he was like, if you were in England, they would have stopped him and said, you're buying us a pint, all us a pint. And in Dubai, I guess people just let him go. You know, I just thought it was a really interesting story. That's like a weird, I was like, I wish there was a picture.
Yeah, that would be a great picture.
Yeah, that's just a weird group. Danny Boyle, Danny Glover, and
I thought you were gonna say a third Danny.
I thought so too. What are you telling me? There's Nick Cage.
Yeah, Danny DeVito.
That would have been that would have been so fun too.
Like, we're just the Danny Club. We hang out because we're all Dannys.
Yeah, exactly. No, screw Nick Cage. Look, let's all have the Dannys all hang out.
Danny DeVito would not have left.
You know, what is it? That picture you're saying of those people, man. Now with Larry talking about the picture with Robin Williams, and then there's a picture of those people, you know, like, I don't understand why anybody didn't like getting their picture taken, you know, back then, you know, or whatever. But, you know, do you still have that picture, by the way, of Robin Williams?
Somewhere, yes, I do.
Oh.
You gotta show it to us someday.
Come get you.
I'll dig it out.
Wait till Spielberg's retired.
Spielberg, yeah. When you air this podcast.
Well, I don't think Spielberg's listening.
I don't know.
You never know. He might be into Hitchcock.
He's really into Hitchcock.
Actually, the limitations is up.
He's wanting to. He's making a remake of Notorious, and so he needs to some research.
Please no.
You know what, if he I don't know, if he did a remake of Notorious, it would definitely have to, a lot of it would have to be changed, you know, and stuff. But he's already doing West Side Story, so like,
oh wow,
you didn't know that?
I don't know.
That's coming out. Yeah, he's already made it.
Wow.
And Rob Zombie's already made
I'm very excited about that.
The monster. Rob Zombie's already made. He's already shot.
Oh, it's already done?
Oh. Yeah, it's already done.
Oh, shit.
So
I'm actually excited for that because I know how obsessed Rob Zombie is with the monsters. So
yeah,
I'm pretty excited.
So I'm excited to see it too. I didn't know it was already shot because he's only been promoting it like as if it were whatever, but somebody actually spilled the beans.
He probably didn't want media circus.
Well, I mean, he's gonna get it no matter what.
Well, like, that's done now, you know. He probably didn't want people snooping on the set or whatever.
Oh, that's true.
What we're talking about.
Yeah, like he probably changed the title of it or whatever on
probably like top secret. Top yeah. Secret shoot.
That's what they did with like Friday the 13th. They didn't want people knowing.
Don't need many people in it. It's just the family and a few extra characters. Like, it's not like there's gonna be big crowd scenes or anything like that. So you can really do that under wraps.
Yeah. I don't even know if I should be talking about this. Uh-oh. Like, you know,
how did you find out that it was already shot?
Somebody knew somebody that worked on it.
Oh, so you just leaked this information.
I just did. I might have to edit this out.
You can edit this, yeah.
I might have to edit this out.
Coward.
All right. What, coward? You don't want me to, get in trouble? Well, actually, he leaked it out. So it's already
that's all good. You're
good. Oh well, if you guys hear that, yeah, and you've listened this far, thank you for listening to our podcast all the way through. I bet Lisa will write that on the thing. Listen to this all the way through. You'll hear some juicy information that can get Jonathan into some serious trouble. All right, I love you guys. Thank you guys all for listening. Tune in next month when we are going to be talking about Trouble with Harry, unless we are canceled, you know, by then. So we'll see. As far as I know, I don't think we can cancel ourselves, but you know, Podby may be talking to us or whatever after this episode. Who knows? You know,
Trouble with Larry.
Oh, Larry, like you
and Jonathan
and me. Yeah, well, you didn't leak any information out. Well, actually, you did. We're both in trouble. Lisa's the only one who's not going to be in trouble right now for anything. Yeah, you know, not yet.
If I hang around with you guys anymore, I'm sure I'll get in trouble.
Yes, you got to come down to Scares I Care again.
We're going
this July.
Yeah,
fuck yeah, let's hang out, let's party.
I mean, I won't be partying, but
I won't be partying. You know, I don't drink.
I'll be tabling, and I will be reading with Cynthia Pelayo and what's her name? Crap.
He's gonna love you.
Old, what's her name? Yeah.
V.
Al.
This is all getting left in. If you're gonna make me leave, so now you are in trouble. Oh yes. Oh, God. You just said if you hung out with us long enough, you'll get in trouble.
This is totally a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh my God. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to being there. She knows I love her. I'm just really tired.
It's okay. We're all tired and now we're saying things we shouldn't be saying.
But I'm really looking forward to, you know, actually seeing human beings.
I know, right? I think they still have the mask policy, but I'm not sure if that's being looked at or not.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to do that.
Because, like, the original idea was that they were going to abide by whatever the state called for, and the state has lifted all masks, you know. So
Veronica Castro.
Okay, Veronica Castro. I'm
so sorry, she's gonna murder me. She's gonna murder. I'm not even gonna make it.
Well, this podcast will come out before Scares That Care, so sorry.
I hope she doesn't listen.
Yeah, just be like, don't listen. Oh, well, if you tell her not to listen, she'll probably listen. So just don't.
Yeah, well, I'm not that dumb.
Don't listen to this. Oh, okay. You know, popping in my headphones right now. But yeah, so it great. I would love to see you there. Come by your table.
That's great.
Buy a freaking book from you. I've already got one book from you. I got to buy more.
We'll get a coffee or something.
Yeah, definitely. Paul will be there again. Paul Prezenza. So he's usually my podcast co-host and stuff. You met him.
Yes.
I think, before. So he's the cow guy.
Yes. The human cow. Yes. The
human cow. Yes. He would not take any offense to that because he loves cows. You know? So I'll mention that. I said your name on this podcast with you and he'll love it. And that you're coming. He's been dying to go back. I think he's only going on Saturday. I may be there the whole week. I live in Williamsburg, so there's really no excuse for me not to go. Great. You know, but
that's so fun. I think I'm gonna have candles too. I'm very excited.
You're selling candles?
Debuting two new scents that I'm working on with a friend. One is Haunted Library, and the other is.
What does that smell like?
It'll obviously smell like old books, but it'll have some kind of ghostly flowery scent and some kind of, we're still working on it. And the other one is Ghost Pussy. I'm very excited.
All righty. I don't even want to ask about that.
It'll smell very nice.
Okay. It's an interesting like title, but all right.
Yeah,
you know,
inspired a little bit by Gwyneth Paltrow's famous candle.
What was her famous candle?
Her This Is What My Pussy Smells Like.
Oh yeah.
Everybody makes fun of it all the time and acts really dumb about it.
So now can we go back to Gwyneth Paltrow? It comes full circle.
know? Amazing. Gwyneth Paltrow as a Hitchcock blonde and Gwyneth Paltrow as a candle creator.
Candle creator, there you go. Yeah, well, we're like very excited to see you there and everything. And I did not know you were coming back, but I didn't ask, you know, yet. So yeah, I'm glad.
I'm psyched. It's gonna be so fun.
It is. It's gonna be great to see everybody again. Period. And the funny thing is, so last year I moved to LA, as you know, and then I came back here. But last year I was worried because I was like, damn, I'm going to miss Scares That Care this, you know, last year. Oh, fuck, you know, well, this will be the, you know, hopefully the only year I miss it. Then maybe next year I'll come back and visit. And then, yeah, then they don't have one because of COVID. And so I guess that's COVID doing for me what I can do for myself, you know, and now I'm able to go back and hang out with everybody.
Yeah.
All the horror conventions pretty much stopped, you know.
Of all the conventions. Yeah,
books, conventions,
everything. I actually went to AWP and it was literally as news was breaking. And I had already flown to San Antonio. I got there a couple days early and Crystal called me. He's like, they're saying there's a state of emergency. There's this and this and that. And I'm like, well, I'm already here. So half the people pulled out, but I was there.
Yeah, it was such a strange... Like, honestly, that was like the strangest thing in a way, you know, like,
because nobody knew what was really happening.
And like, it just became like we've had a little like outbreaks before, but we've never had anything like this insane in a way ourselves.
I mean, in our lifetime. Yes.
In our lifetime. Yes.
There's been plagues. Yeah.
And like the Black Death and shit. And
yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the internet and they didn't have all these things, you know, yeah. Like, and so, you know, I don't know how long the Black Death lasted.
Yeah, back then they just had horrible hygiene. Like, it's crazy to have something like this in a time when we have fairly decent hygiene.
You know,
by comparable standards. Obviously not as good as it can be, as we see now. But, you know, like now I think people are a lot more conscious. Like, I mean, not that I didn't wash my hands, you know, after going to the bathroom or anything before. But, like, now I'm like, really conscious of like washing my hands. Like when I come back from like leaving the house, I always wash my hands now because I'm like, who knows what's on me, you know?
Exactly.
Touching things, like, so I think we've become a lot. The one upside is that there will be a lot more awareness about germs,
cleanliness, and yeah,
like
we used to.
Right? Yeah,
we can hate. We can. It's
bow to each other.
Yeah, we can't. We can't. Like, I'm sort of missing all the hugs and stuff. Everybody's like afraid to like touch each other. And
if you're vaccinated, you shouldn't be scared. You know? Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for this. This was fun.
Thank you.
And I had a blast. If you guys stay around real quick, I'm going to talk to you guys after, but thank you guys who listened. If you listened all the way this far, I'm sorry for all the trouble we've caused. but we will be back with Trouble with Harry next month, and I think I'm not sure who we have as a special guest on that one. Is that your friend that's coming on that one, or is that Strangers on a Train?
Who, me?
Yeah, because I think we had a friend of yours coming on.
Joe McCord, Strangers on a Train, I think.
Okay, yeah.
When is that, the 20th of September or something
like that? Yeah,
I think I let him know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out, because I think that's way down the line. But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make sure we got this down before things got chaotic this summer. It's gonna get pretty nuts.
Yeah. Next month is Trouble with Harry, and after that, I don't know.
I think it's Strangers on a Train. So there you go. All right. Well, thank you guys so much, and hope everybody enjoyed the show. And let us know what you guys think. Did you guys like Notorious? What are your guys' thoughts on it? We'd love to hear from you guys. Thank you guys. Bye.
Au revoir.